Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
It's not much of a stretch to suggest that as a stuntman, Hal Needham was an accomplished athlete. He had to jump from flaming wrecks, tuck and roll to avoid breaking even more bones than he eventually broke, about 60, and wrestle anxious horses to a walk after he dropped onto them from airplanes. It's also not much of a stretch to suggest that Hal Needham is nuts. He welded a cannon to a car in order to be able to blast part of a telephone pole out the barrel of it into the ground, thus turning the car over while Needham was driving it down a beach at 60 miles an hour. He jumped a car off a ridge and halfway across a river in order to crash onto a barge being controlled by a guy who hadn't quite understood how fast he was supposed to be going. When I had the opportunity to talk with Hal Needham, the author of Stuntman, My Car-Crashing, Plane-Jumping, Bone-Breaking, Death-Defying Hollywood Life, I began the conversation by asking him what had inspired him to become a stuntman rather than a movie star.
Probably talent.
A one-word answer.
I had the ability to be a stuntman. But to be an actor would be a whole different kettle of fish, you know. Mm. And I knew also that if I got in and if I were halfway successful, that I should do pretty good at it because I was always physical and agile and everything. So it was a choice I made.
In various movies, you doubled for Kirk Douglas and Burt Reynolds and lots of other people. Did any of those guys ever say to you, "Hey, Hal, take a day off. I'm going to jump off that building or dive through that window myself"?
Not exactly those words, but I've had a lot of them come up and say, "Look, don't you think I can do this?" And, "Hey, listen, I'm going to get paid if they do it or if I do it, you know." And so if they want to do it, that's fine by me, but there's a problem with that. The production company has an insurance company that guarantees everybody's going to be well and all that kind of stuff. If an actor goes out there and gets hurt and shuts a company down for a few days or a week or a month or forever or whatever it is, it's going to be very, very expensive. So they just will not allow the actors to do those big stunts. Mm. And so they hire some dummy like me and give me a few $100 and say, "Go turn the car over."
You stopped doing stunts and took up directing movies and various other activities some years ago. But is there one stunt that even now causes you to wake up at night in a cold sweat?
Not really. No, I mean, I've had some close calls, but as I look back at them, I say, "Well, you dummy, here's what you did wrong. You should have anticipated this or known that or whatever." But as long as I came out unscathed on the other side, I figured I'd successfully done the job.
Well, unscathed, in your case, is a relative term. We're looking at 56 broken bones, breaking your back twice, and goodness knows what injuries from these various times you were set on fire. Tell me about a close call.
Well, I had two that were really pretty close. One was I put a hydrogen peroxide rocket, 15,000 horsepower rocket, in the back of a pickup truck for a GM commercial and jumped a ravine out in Westlake out here in California. I jumped 150 feet, and the thing about it was on the other side in my landing area was a solid wall that they had built so they could hold the dirt and build me a landing area. And I was going to be traveling in excess of 100 miles an hour by the time I got to it. So if I don't clear that wall, it's a wrap. You know, I mean, they're going to be walking slow and singing low behind me the next day at the cemetery. But that one, as I was sitting there looking at it, I'm going, "Needham, you may have let your alligator mouth overload your jaybird ass," you know. So anyway, I just stuck it in gear and went for it, and it turned out all right. I mean, that's one
or
of the times.
Or else we wouldn't be talking today.
Well, I broke my back, but it's still, I survived it. Let me put it that way.
How important is it for a stuntman to be a good athlete?
Oh, you can't do stunts without being an athlete. When I first came into the business, most of the stuntmen, not all of them, but most of them, were cowboys. And in those days, now, today, the cowboys that go on the rodeo circuit and everything, mm-hmm. they're athletes. They're athletes. They work out. They train at it. But when I came in the picture business, cowboys were an athlete. They just couldn't do what the guys today can do. And so being an athlete is really, really important. And the better athlete you are, the better stuntman you're going to be.
Is it fair to say that stuntmen and pro athletes also have in common a reluctance to tell their employers that they're injured?
Oh, especially in the picture business. Now, I watched the Super Bowl over the weekend, and three guys got hurt in the first half, and some came back, some didn't, and everything. But stuntmen, they don't want to tell. If you have a reputation for getting hurt every time you do a stunt and put in a claim and all that kind of stuff, you're not going to get any calls. Your reputation is going to be, no, don't hire him. He gets hurt all the time. So, man, I've worked with broken collarbones and ribs and all kinds of things just to keep that from happening.
Is there a borderline on that? Is there a boundary line where you say, well, I'd like to keep working, but, oh, boy, this isn't really going to happen today?
Yeah, if you can't walk and can't get the job done, it's time to sit down and let somebody else do it. But I always felt as long as I could, oh, watch this, Alf. As long as I could take a Percodan or two and get to the set, I'd try to give it a whirl.
Has anybody ever put together a stuntman competition? Because given the current state of TV fare, it might be a hit, don't you think?
You know what? They did, and it must have been 30 years ago or something like that. CBS run a show for, I think they did it 2 years in a row or something like that. But I think if you really put some thought into it and came up with some things that are spectacular, but where you're not going to kill anybody and so on and so forth, I think it'd be a great show. People don't realize that when you're doing a big stunt, you have to have ramps, you have to have rigging, you have to have explosions and all that. And that's all part of it, but that's background, the stuff that people have no idea what's going on. And I think it'd be interesting to show them what's happening, because it doesn't take anything away from the stunt, because the stunt's still there. Mm-hmm. But it just shows the preparation and how exact everything has to be to make it work.
You crashed cars, you blew up trucks, you jumped from balconies before the production of special effects for the movies became digital. Do today's movies still call for courageous, albeit sometimes foolhardy stuntmen, or is everything, all the danger, computer-generated now?
Well, they still require quite a number of stuntmen, but computer-generated stuff to me is just boring. It's not realistic. You see them do things, you just say, there's no man on, Superman couldn't do that, for crying out loud, you know? And so when you lose the realism and the believability of it, they've lost me.
We often discuss record-setting achievements on Only a Game. Tell us about how you helped shatter the sound barrier with a car equipped with a rocket.
Well, first of all, I drove it first, and I went 620 miles an hour. My braking parachutes didn't work, and I crashed off the end of the dry lake at 350, and I said, you know, somebody could really get hurt bad doing this. So I got somebody else, a little younger and maybe a little dumber, and got him in the car. And we went out different places, and we wound up at Edwards Air Force Base. We ran the car. We had 48,000 horsepower that developed in 5 milliseconds, all right? It went from zero. That thing went 142 miles an hour the first second, all right? But we could only run about 714 miles an hour with that, so we needed more power. I met General Chuck Yeager over in the Philippines doing a film for the Air Force, and he was the color commentator on the show for CBS. And he said, well, you know, what you need is a Sidewinder missile. And I said, oh, big deal. Yeah, I'll just run down to the hardware store and buy some. He arranged for me to buy 6 Sidewinder missiles from the Navy. without the warheads, of course. And that's the way we broke the sound barrier. We strapped one on that thing, and the kid that was driving was Stan Barrett. And when he reached the 2.5 mile marker, he was doing about 700 miles an hour. And he hit that Sidewinder missile that had 12,000 horsepower, and it was enough to put him through the sound barrier.
What? You were there. What did it sound like?
Well, I tell you, see, he was 2.5 miles downrange from us when he broke it, so we couldn't hear it back at the starting line. But I had cameras out there 1.5, 2 miles out all over the place, and they said they could hear it, and they said it wasn't loud like an airplane, which has a lot of surface and everything on it, breaking sound barrier, makes a big noise. He said, this is small. It's only like 2.5 feet in diameter. Mm-hmm. And they said it sounded like a high-powered rifle being fired.
Helping to establish a NASCAR team in 1981 must have seemed pretty tame after the rocket car adventure because they don't allow rockets on NASCAR cars. Tell us a little bit about what attracted you to that challenge.
Well, they don't allow them, but I was thinking them a whole bunch about putting one on. They wouldn't let me. But I had raced some out on the West Coast here myself for 4 or 5 years. And after I did Smokey and things, my checkbook was looking pretty good, so I decided to start a NASCAR race team. I did it like everything else. I sat back and looked at it and said, well, you know what, here's what I need to do. For instance, I needed PR. I hired an actor, 6'2", a black actor out of Atlanta, Georgia. He was a Shakespearean actor, okay? I put him in a high hat and tux and tails and things, and I walked him down through the garage area. I told the voodoo doctor, I said, okay, I'll move up to a car. You walk about 6 feet behind me, and when I get to a car, I'll stop. You just walk up and stare at that car. And that was going to be the two competitors I had. Well, damn. Next thing I know, NASCAR, the sanctioning body, they're on the microphone saying, Hal Needham, come to the NASCAR trailer. But I tell you what, those people down there went crazy. They went crazy.
Well, we talked about your breaking the sound barrier with a rocket car, and you also established the record for being the highest paid stuntman. Beyond that, you may have set another record, although the circumstances probably aren't recorded in any book but your own. Has anybody else ever been robbed of his watch by the same gang of women more often than you have?
That doesn't bode too good for me being too smart, does it?
You better tell us about it.
Well, all right. I met a lady in a bar. We were down in wherever at a race. I met a lady in a bar, and we decided to carry the conversation up to my room. Got there. Oh, on the way up, I took some drinks with me. So I got up the room. I'd been out the track all day. I said, I'm going to shower. While I was in the shower, I heard this humongous crash. I came out. I said, what happened? She said, oh, I dropped the drink tray. And I said, oh, no problem. We'll just order some more. She said, well, here, this is my drink, and I didn't spill it. And you drink it while I shower up. And I said, okay. I lay down on the bed, drank that. And that's the last thing I remember till 6 o'clock next morning when my crew chief is calling me saying, where the hell are you, Hal? That lady took my Rolex, and she took my money and my rings. And you know what really made me angry? She even took my Louis Vuitton shaving kit bag to carry all of her loot in. That really made me angry. Anyway, a year later, same bar, different lady. And you know something? That lady must have had the same potion that the other one did, because next thing I knew, it was 6 in the morning. I get back to Hollywood, and my producer, I told him what happened. He gave me a Movado. Do you ever see a Movado? That's the biggest hunk of gold I ever had on my wrist in my life. He gave me that just so I wouldn't be late getting to the set. At the end of the season, I threw a big party for my racing crew. Mm-hmm. And we're at this restaurant, bar, club, and a real good-looking lady walked by. And I said to my driver, Harry Gann, I said, I think I'll ask her to dance. He said, let me hold your watch. That's all he said to me.
Al Needham has worked in over 4,500 TV episodes and 310 feature films. He owned a rocket car until he gave it to the Smithsonian. He's broken 56 bones and his back twice. His book is Stuntman, My Car-Crashing, Plane-Jumping, Bone-Breaking, Death-Defying Hollywood Life. It's published by Little Brown, and the author spoke to me from Los Angeles. Mr. Needham, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, you know what? This has been the most fun I've had in a long time. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
My conversation with Al Needham, the author of Stuntman, My Car-Crashing, Plane-Jumping, Bone-Breaking, Death-Defying Hollywood Life, will be featured in this week's program. We'll also have a story courtesy of Only a Game's Doug Trabu about a Division III swimmer whose times have the Division I competition kicking harder, and we'll profile the San Diego State men's basketball team, losers of only one game this season and number 6 in the nation as they prepare to take on UNLV on Saturday. We'll learn about a squad of diligent retirees who are making sure student athletes at the University of Kansas remember to be students, and I'll check in with Kevin Hench regarding the progress of various NBA teams trying to stay healthy, sharp, and motivated as the snow melts, or some of it does, a little bit. So join us, and remember you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.